This is Living Planet.
It's a while since you were on the ladder now, Jeff.
Huh?
Is it a while since you were on the...
So, I'm in Limerick, a city and a county on the west coast of Ireland, and in a kind of slippery situation, you might say.
Put your leg over, your other leg over, your other leg over there, to that, yeah.
There, right? You didn't expect this, did you?
No. I have to say, dear listener, I did not expect to be climbing down a rickety and kind of very slippery metal ladder and onto a small red motorboat with two octogenarians. I could see myself going into the river here. All the while trying not to fall into Ireland's longest river, the Shannon.
There's nothing to fear. That is here. That's what I keep telling people.
Pat Lysate, who you just heard there, is about to turn 82. He's a particularly lively man, full of quips and chat, as he shepherds us onto the vessel.
There's a fellow down the Isle of Feature by the name of Walk Easy. Walk Easy. Do you understand our lingo?
Pat owns the boat and he does a bit of work on the river, guiding cruise ships and that kind of thing. But he's also a bit of a jack of all trades. At one point he was a printer, then he was a builder, and he also owned a pet shop for about 5 years. Now he's supposedly...
beginning to retire at this hour of my life, if you know what I mean. Taking it handy.
He knows this part of the Shannon like the back of his hand.
Pat is Mr. Shannon.
That is Gerry Siney. Gerry, or Ger as everyone calls him, is 85 and is from about 10 minutes down the road.
I was born within feet of the River Shannon, well, inside of Limerick, but it's the same river. And it's been part of my life since boyhood.
Ger and Pat have known each other since they were kids. Ger would cycle down here, get in a boat and travel across the short distance to the other bank, or the ruins of an old castle that still stand on a small overgrown island just in front of Pat's bungalow.
Most of my misspent youth were spent going wild on this very location. Don't tell her details now.
Were you part of the misspent youth on the river?
I was too young at the time.
Well, I came too young.
So, having spent their lives and misspent their youth on the Shannon, Ger and Pat have a special connection to the river and the creatures that live in and around it.
See any seals anymore?
Yeah. There's a kingfisher. See the kingfisher, Ger? He's gone in there.
They point out some other large blackbirds perched like sentinels on the parapets near the castle, spreading out their massive wings like they're about to hug each other. They're called cormorants. Ger explains what they're doing.
What they're doing here is they're drying out their wings and their body, because too much time in the water depletes the oils that they need to be able to function.
It's an amazing thing. Like, I'm always interested in it, you know. I'd be fascinated by it. I never tire of it. You know, it's a way of life.
But Ger, who's chairman of a group called the River Shannon Protection Alliance, fears all of this could be about to change.
All of this is under threat from the pipeline proposal. There's no simpler way to put it than that.
The controversial Shannon to Dublin water pipeline has received government approval. Ishka Éireann
would connect the Partine Basin with a treatment plant in Bird Hill and Tipperary and Piemont in Dublin.
If this pipe is built, it's going to be 10 billion euros wasted and nothing done to improve the water supply.
85% of 1.7 million people are dependent on a single source of water coming from the river.
Pipeline project to pump water from our longest river to Dublin and the other eastern counties.
I'm Jennifer Collins, and in this episode of Living Planet, I'm in Ireland exploring what is kind of an age-old story that is unfolding in other parts of the world too. It's a tale of rural-urban divide and tension over access, allocation and control of a particular resource. And that resource, perhaps unexpectedly in typically rainy Ireland, is water.
Environmentally, it will be ruinous. The Shannon supports countless forms of life, bird life, aqualife. It features a number of European designated special areas of conservation, special heritage areas.
Ger is talking about the damage he and others in the Protection Alliance believe will be caused by a proposed 170-kilometre multi-billion euro pipeline that would take 330 million litres of water a day from the Shannon. The idea is to pump the water to the country's east coast to feed a rapidly growing population and industrial base in and around Ireland's capital, Dublin.
I am the River Shannon, on Shannon in Irish, the original language of this island. Named for the goddess Shannon, granddaughter of the sea god Manannan Mac Liar, I was born when she journeyed to seek wisdom at the Well of Conla. When she did, the waters rose forth, unifying with Shannon and transforming her into me, the River Shannon, possessed of all the goddess's wisdom. I rise in humble beginnings in the northwest of Ireland, springing from a small pool in an ancient jagged karst landscape. I expand and meander for 360 kilometres through 11 counties, splitting the island of Ireland into east and west. In Limerick, I become tidal, and in a vast estuary, my fresh waters start to mingle with the salt of the great Atlantic Ocean.
I'm back on Ireland's east coast in a small, cute town called Leixlip near Dublin. It, like other nearby towns, could benefit from some of the Shannon water if the pipeline is built. Around 17,000 people live here. It's quite a pretty town with lots of green space, a 12th century Norman castle, a few pubs and restaurants, a major US tech company and...
So right now we're in the Leixlip water treatment plant. It's the second largest water treatment plant in the country, and it produces on average about 210 million litres of water per day.
That's Angela Ryan, Asset Strategy Manager at Uisce Éireann, the national utility for public water supply in Ireland. Uisce Éireann is just Irish for Irish water. The utility will oversee the pipeline project.
Right now, Derek, our plant manager, is going to bring us on a tour of this water treatment plant that really serves about 40% of the entire population within the region.
Do you know you're going to be getting roped into this today?
No.
I seem to be, yeah.
You didn't feel fair to me.
As we walk through the water treatment plant, Angela explains that the country, for now, isn't water-stressed. Ireland is definitely known for having a lot of rain. It's a never-ending source of conversation here. But the population on the East Coast is large and growing, and the water network hasn't really kept up.
When we're thinking about 1.75 million people, 85% of that population are dependent on a single river.
That river is the Liffey. It flows from the Wicklow Mountains out through Dublin and into the Irish Sea. And it's way smaller than the Shannon. It's also totally overexploited. Some 40% of the Liffey's water is being extracted to supply the area. So there's no spare capacity or other source of water if anything goes wrong, like a pollution event, says Angela, which they are constantly monitoring for.
I suppose this is an interesting piece of history.
So we're in a long hallway with windows on one side. Assistant plant manager Derek Naud points out several small glass tanks. Now, I'm really bad at estimating sizes, but I want to say they're probably about 70 centimetres in length and not very wide.
Trout would have been kept in these tanks. And as the water came through, if the trout became unwell, there was a problem with the water.
Of course, the trout haven't been used in a long time for animal welfare reasons, but also because the treatment plant has, you know, more modern tools now for monitoring potential pollution events.
Are we safe?
We are safe, yeah.
Safe today.
Even with all the monitoring, if there was a massive contamination event like a catastrophic sewage spill upstream, it would eliminate the entire water supply for a third of Ireland's population, Angela says.
Measuring the MTU, yes, of this sample, and that's what allows you...
The east of the country is already drier than the west, where most of the rain falls, And as the planet heats up, studies predict the West will see more flooding, while the East will see more prolonged dried spells. Climate change will also lead to more intense storms, which can impact water quality. Angela mentions a storm in November 2019, which meant water coming into the plant was really cloudy.
So we had to alert a third of the population of this entire region that we were running the plant over capacity during this event and that they shouldn't drink the water unless they boiled it. So that has a huge impact.
Angela says the pipeline is needed because Dublin is dependent on one source of water that is vulnerable to climate change and pollution. But critics say the pipeline wouldn't be necessary if the utility plugged Dublin's leaky water system. Something like 32% of water is lost in the antiquated system before it even reaches taps. Angela says the utility is investing in reducing leaks to 20% by 2030, but that
even if we got leakage down below 10%, even towards 0%, we would still need a new project to bring in new supply into the region.
Ishka Aaron says it's looked at hundreds of options to boost supply to the greater Dublin area, including other rivers, lakes and groundwater. But ultimately, it deemed the Shannon the most viable option because
we're taking the water from the bottom of the catchment, so all of the environment along the route of the river gets the benefit of the water up till there, and we're abstracting the water just before it becomes tidal again. So again, we would see this as the least environmental impact option that we could select.
Another reason is that it already has a large hydroelectric dam at the bottom, which stores, regulates and diverts the Shannon water for power generation. So Ishka Aaron won't have to build a new dam. That dam is called Ardna Crusha and is run by the ESB, Ireland's electricity utility.
We will enter into an agreement with the ESB that they will reduce their energy production to allow us to take that water. So there's no net impact on the River Shannon. Instead of the ESB taking that water for generation, we instead will take it for water supply. One of the points I always try to make a comparison with this, it's about a teaspoon of water out of a pint glass. You wouldn't really see that as a difference there.
Water is life. People have long known that, and once often left offerings along my banks and on my riverbed, giving thanks for my fertile floodwaters, once abundant fish and drinking water. They have settled along my banks from before the time of the Vikings to the modern age. They have used me for travel and trade. My waters have been abstracted for electricity. I have been dammed, channelized, polluted with agricultural and industrial runoff. My alluvial forests have shrunk. So too have populations of eel, trout and Atlantic salmon that once leapt up my waters to the exact place where they were born to bring new life into the world.
When we have a surplus, you know what I mean? But we'll head up and I'll show you the power station.
That's Pat Lysate again. Pat lives on the natural course of the Shannon. He's lived at the same spot pretty much all his life, where the river meets a canal built and run by the electricity utility, the ESB.
This was blasted out. Dynamite, explosives, whatever.
The canal and the hydroelectric dam at Ardna Crusha were built between 1925 and 1929 by German company Siemens. It was the first major infrastructure project of the new Irish state, which had just gained independence from Britain. Thousands of men worked on the dam, which was transformative for the island. Pat takes us up the canal to the Ardna Crusha hydroelectric dam. The overgrown banks, which are about 20 feet above us, are full of trees and bushes. The rocks are at strange, sharp angles made from the dynamite. We approach the dam. An enormous concrete construction about 98 foot high. It once provided nearly all of Ireland's electricity. Today it's more like 2%. As we get closer, Pat points out a row of grey boons floating on the water.
Not really. You're not supposed to go beyond that point, right?
Some workers in high-vis jackets are walking around outside the power station. and Pat wants to bring us as close as possible to the turbines.
No, I'll get you in here. What I do, lads, I can go in here on Sundays.
So, I'm a bit reticent because I don't want to get him into trouble.
You know, you don't have to if it's going to get you.
But Jer, excited to get close, kicks my foot gently.
You're dying to go in.
There's two more guys up there as well, and there's a fine rate.
We slip by the booms, and Pat explains that just two turbines are working today. You can tell, he says, because just a small amount of water is trickling through the spillway above us down into the canal. And the canal itself is relatively still. If four are working.
Like Niagara Falls, when there's too much water upstream, they release it here. These things bend.
The ESB abstracts up to 94% of the Shannon's water at a weir called Partine, about 14 kilometres upstream of where we are. It diverts the water down the canal for electricity generation. But it's also legally required to send at least 10 cubic metres of water a second down the natural course of the Shannon, which flows by Pat's house. That's so the real Shannon doesn't get dried up or get too low. The ESB controls the water levels at a lake called Loch Derg, just near the weir. The lake is popular with tourists and the boating set. Pat points out a huge cement tower. It's a fish lift, installed in 1959.
Before that, all the fish were trapped. They couldn't get up. They were dying here.
By the time the fish pass was built, the damage had already been done, and it's only gotten worse since then. Eel populations have plummeted. Salmon numbers moving up the Shannon scheme dropped from around 9,000 in the 1970s to about 1,000 over the past decade.
That plant has decimated the salmon in River Shannon. They've decimated it, and a few other species also. And it was one of the finest. The Shannon was one of the finest salmon fisheries in the world. In the world.
The Shannon has already seen major damage because of the dam, and is in poor ecological condition, say scientists. And the worry for Jer and the River Shannon Protection Alliance is that it could come under even more pressure if the water pipeline is built, because
it will lower the levels of the river.
Ishka Aaron says it wants to abstract 2% of the Shannon's average flow, and that it will never take more than that. You'll remember Angela Ryan said it was like taking a teaspoon out of a pint glass. Jer and Pat say siphoning off that amount is fine when there's a lot of rain and a lot of water in the Shannon, but not in the summer or when there's a drought. And they wonder what will happen to Loch Derg, which is a protected freshwater lake fed by the Shannon.
It'll have to have some effect on the place, I'd say.
There have already been instances in the past when levels in Loch Derg have dropped so much that the fishermen and other lake users couldn't get out in their boats. And locals like Pat feel.
That's another thing now. You know, what's that going to do to us? Dublin wants water, they'll get it.
Pat is referring to a feeling among many outside of Dublin, particularly on the West Coast, that regional development and resources are skewed toward the capital, where the government also sits. Jer and the River Shannon Protection Alliance believe the government and Ishka Aaron haven't properly listened to their concerns and proposals for alternative ways to bolster the capital's water supply. The group also questions the government's future water demand projections for Dublin.
This pipeline is not needed.
I formed around 10,000 years ago at the end of the last ice age. The people of this island have kept the story of my birth alive in their mythology, Ogluin Gugluin, from parent to child, and have passed on the knowledge encoded therein. My waters and the other streams and rivers on this island brought the outside world to us. It was how people traded, how they fished, how they moved around the land. Others came from faraway lands, travelling on my currents, bringing with them new information. Many visited me and visit me still as a wellspring of new ideas, fresh thinking and inspiration, as the goddess Shannon once did. Now, in the digital age, people turn to computers or their phones to access information, trade and connect with the world via streams of data.
But the Shannon pipeline won't just be supplying drinking water to the greater Dublin area. It will also go to industry. If you take hydropower out of the equation, some 72% of water abstracted is for industrial use, followed by 22% for drinking water. And most of Ireland's big industry is on the East Coast. One of those industries, one that is booming in the country, is data centres. There are no figures for Ireland, but a study in the US found that 57% of water used for cooling in data centres is potable and could be used for drinking. Ireland has 82 operational data centres. Nearly all of those are in and around Dublin. They're seen as a key new growth sector in Ireland. Some 40 more have gotten approval. And whether you realise it or not, data centres make everything you do online possible. That could be matching with someone on a dating app, streaming a TV show, or even buying a flight. Often, these hubs, full of rows and rows of servers, are tucked away in windowless grey buildings in nondescript business parks. All right, so we've just arrived. I'm just going to get out of the car now. Like one I've come to in Ballycoolan in North Dublin for a tour. It's a rare opportunity to get a look inside a data centre. But before I go in, I need to get through the high-tech security involving a biometric fingerprint reading, a camera. It's all a bit complicated.
Okay. Okay.
Well, for me anyway, because just technology is not my friend.
Okay, this is the most high-tech sign-in I've ever had.
I'm here to meet with...
Peter Lantry's my name. I'm the Managing Director for Equinix in Ireland.
Equinix is a US company with 260 data centres in 33 countries, including Ireland. Tiny Ireland has become a bit of a magnet for data centres. Some say it's because of the country's young, highly educated workforce. Others say it's down to generous corporate tax rates. But there's another reason, says Peter.
Ireland is like in the Goldilocks zone. It's not too cold and it's not too hot. So Ireland is actually perfect for digital infrastructure cooling requirements.
Inside the data centre, which is basically a grey windowless box, it looks kind of like a prison for data.
It's a bit of a maze.
We walk past rows and rows of server racks and cabinets in what look like massive cages. It's hot and it's noisy, which Peter tells me is...
Well, the noisier and the hotter, the more efficient it is actually, because it means that we're managing the cooling systems to the highest level of efficiency and using less electricity and actually less water as well.
As we walk into one particularly noisy room, Peter says...
Now you're in the cloud. So now you've arrived into what is the cloud.
You know those pictures you see depicting the cloud with two computers connected by a fluffy cartoon cloud? Yeah, it's not like that at all. It's metal and plastic and colourful wires and fibre optic cables running overhead, streaming out of what look like cassette tapes.
Each individual one of those fibres is the connection of one business with another business. And one network with another network, and that then connects globally to all the networks around the world. And then we will make sure it's cooled in the most efficient way.
Keeping all of those servers cool is really important. It's like if your laptop or phone gets too hot, it's just not good for the hardware. The ideal temperature for equipment like this is between 18 and 27 degrees Celsius. So that brings us back to Ireland being in the Goldilocks zone for data centres that Peter mentioned earlier. I won't go into too much detail here about the various ways to keep data centre servers chill, but the argument goes that Ireland's mild climes and westerly winds mean data centres can take advantage of ambient air to help with cooling. That basically means they can use air from outside the plant rather than energy-intensive AC.
Statistics that were released today by the CSO that electricity consumption by data centres increased by nearly a third last year. If you go back to 20.
But they're consuming a massive amount of Ireland's power and water.
When you look at water use, each one uses
an increase in that time, and it has led some to call for a ban on any more data.
Now, there's a lot of controversy over how much water and energy data centres use for cooling. And although Ireland is supposedly in this Goldilocks zone, data centres are still putting a massive strain on the grid. They used about 21% of Ireland's electricity in 2023. It was 5% in 2015. But are they really big water users? Now, that's where the picture gets a little bit more complicated, in Ireland at least. Data centres tend to use most water, mainly for peak cooling when temperatures are above 25 degrees Celsius, which doesn't happen often in Ireland. We don't have figures for Equinix's Irish water use, though they say it's small compared to bigger players. But figures from 2020 show large data centres owned by the likes of Google and Amazon can use somewhere between 0.5 million and 5 million litres of water a day when it's hot. The upper range is rare, but it's the equivalent to the water use of a large town in Ireland of about 40,000 people. Angela Ryan from water utility Ishka Éireann told me that Irish data centres are comparatively small industrial uses of water and aren't putting major pressure on the system right now. But that could change, particularly during droughts, which of course will become more frequent as the planet heats up. Plus, there's one other technology that is changing the game. Enter artificial intelligence.
Every time that you interact with ChatGPT and ask it 20 questions back and forth, that's the equivalent of pouring a bottle of water down the drain. Every query that you make.
A big part of the demand is from a growing number of data centers across the nation. And listen to this, from the rise of artificial intelligence.
Senior train on twice as much data, it takes twice as much energy.
And so we're asking, is AI going to help solve the climate crisis or make it worse?
By 2027, AI could account for up to 6.6 billion cubic metres of water withdrawals globally. That's around six times more than is withdrawn in the whole of Denmark in a year. It's a conundrum Peter Lantry says Equinix is facing too.
We're going, well, our cooling system isn't really designed for that. So what we have to do now is install a new, more upgraded cooling system which uses liquid. And the liquid cooling is far more effective and you can go up to much, much higher levels of power use for that liquid. And the power
Equinix is trialling water-based liquid cooling to deal with the shift in computing. Basically, the water stays in a closed loop and is reused. The company says that doesn't necessarily mean an increase in water consumption. It could also potentially contribute to a reduction.
To cool in those engines now. Essentially, it's far more effective cooling. So that's what we'll be doing here. Because a lot of our customers.
Equinix says it's looking at other technologies to reduce overall water use. But even with those improvements, Peter believes Ireland is at risk of falling behind other countries in attracting new data centre business, because economic and population growth are putting pressure on everything from water to housing and energy.
I think it's well known in Ireland that there's a deficit in infrastructure across all the different types of utilities that needs to be looked at quite urgently, I would say.
Standing in another noisy room, besides some large water tanks, Peter says companies have to minimise water use, but the Irish state also needs to boost its water infrastructure and plug the leaks.
I think we should invest in that. We're not a poor country. We should invest in these things. And there shouldn't be any kind of reticence or reluctance to do that. I think once that's done, and once the Shannon diversion happens, and that's Shannon, the Shannon River diversion, That piece of work is one that's been looked at for many, many years now. That's more than a decade in the mix. It just needs to be done, because what that does is it allows all the homes and businesses, which is where the main use of water happens, they need to be given the security supply of water. And that should be coming from the Shannon. If that's what the decision is, if that's where the most available water source is, then let's do it. But the country needs to step up and say, this is what we're going to do.
I have been around for epochs, much longer than any living thing. But I am under pressure from all sides to make electricity, to give water to more people, to farms, and to the modern companies that have made Ireland wealthy. The animals that dwelled within me are disappearing, and new invasive species have taken their place. Can I continue to provide? The old stories warn to tread lightly on the land, not to exploit its gifts. Without clean and flowing water, there can be no life.
I should just have to put a bit this
Back at the Shannon, Pat is shouting instructions at Jer and I as we try to haul ourselves out of the bobbing boat and onto the rickety ladder. He finally manages it after a few touch and go moments. We say bye to Pat.
Bye, lads.
Bye.
And Jer drives you back into Limerick City. On the way, he says the River Shannon Protection Alliance are fine with the river being used, just in a way that they would feel is more sustainable. They're proposing a significantly smaller pipeline that would connect in with other nearby water infrastructure and rivers as an alternative to the current scheme that would tap the Shannon.
Non-stop, continuously.
But Ishka Éireann isn't interested in a smaller pipeline. They're thinking big and aim to apply for planning permission in late 2025. Jer, in the meantime, has no plans to give up the campaign.
I was born and reared in Limerick. Spent a lot of time on the Shannon. The Shannon has meant a great deal to us when we were growing up and after we got grown up. Right. I mean, what more can I say? Probably too much, but there you are, you know. We'll fight this pipeline proposal to the bitter end.
This episode of Living Planet was produced by me, Jennifer Collins, and edited by Neil King. Our sound engineers were Jürgen Kuhn and Michael Springer. What did you think of this episode? We'd love to hear your thoughts, so send us an email or voice message to livingplanet@dw.com. Living Planet is produced by DW in Bonn, Germany.
On this season of Threshold, we'll meet people who are devoting their lives to listening to what other beings are saying.
These animals have incredible social lives. We need a better understanding of how important sound is in their society.
It was a sound that I was completely unfamiliar with, and I could be confident that no human had ever heard that sound before.
Find Threshold wherever you listen to podcasts.